From Iowa Public Radio, this is Under the Golden Dome, a weekly podcast about the Iowa legislature. I'm John Pemble. As the seventh week starts, it's a bit quieter at the Capitol. The week prior was a packed and busy deadline time known as Funnel Week. This is where bills have to pass from one chamber's committee to remain active. This does not apply to all committees.
We'll call a subcommittee meeting to order here for Senate File 2127.
The Senate Ways and Means is one that doesn't have a funnel deadline. Republican Senator Dan Dawson chairs this subcommittee this week for a bill about smoking pipes.
Identify or define metallic and glass devices that are commonly used in the with the biggest problem that Iowa has right now, which is smoking methamphetamines.
This was originally a Commerce Committee bill. Now it has been referred to Ways and Means because it involves adding a new tax, which means the bill is starting over. Since this bill has already been discussed by the same senators in the Commerce Subcommittee, there isn't much discussion or controversy here in Ways and Means, so they sign it forward. Senator Dan Dawson further elaborates why this bill is specifically aimed at glass and metal smoking pipes.
Because that's the only type of device you could use for conductive material for methamphetamines, crack, and heroin if you're going to smoke those. Heroin's not commonly smoked, but just for if you were going to smoke it, that's how you got to use the device because you can't apply a direct flame to them. Otherwise, you burn the product. So what you do is you heat it up, which creates the fume, which then you would smoke from a different end there.
When foil or other metal is used, it leaves behind a residue. With a glass pipe, Dawson says if someone is approached by law enforcement, it can be quickly smashed, often removing evidence the device was used for illegal drugs. Dawson says almost any store can sell these glass or metal pipes, but this bill would require a store to also have a permit as a tobacco retailer.
When you talk to law enforcement out there, they will tell you a lot of these stores selling these devices don't even sell tobacco. And when they question the person in the store, they'll ask them, well, what are you selling this for? And the individual will always say, tobacco, which everyone knows patently that's not true. And so then law enforcement officer will ask them, well, where's your tobacco at? We don't sell it here. So what we're trying to say is that if you're actually selling these for tobacco, then your store needs to hold a tobacco license.
These devices are usually displayed with a sign that says they are only for tobacco use. This bill states if these devices are marketed to be used with controlled substances, the penalty is a simple misdemeanor. The bill also imposes an excise tax for the sale of these pipes. This is sometimes called a sin tax.
I mean, on a personal level, I think it's unconscionable for a business owner to sell these devices, full well knowing that the destruction that these things eventually create in people's lives, and then ask taxpayers to pay for it on the back end through the court system, through a variety of other issues. So we can't ban them. U.S. constitutional case law says I can't ban the device, so what I'm going to try to do is at least make that business owner deploy a conscious business decision that if I'm going to sell these, this is what the cost is going to be, and at least give some relief to the taxpayer on the back end in a criminal justice system.
For a pipe that is less than $20, an excise tax of $10 is added. If the pipe is more than $20, the excise tax will be $20. This tax will be applied specifically to fund specialty courts, like a drug court. Drug courts are designed to offer solutions like treatment or therapy instead of a harsher penalty. They have a goal of addressing the problem to reduce recidivism.
I mean, a lot of these issues are overlapping. You know, mental health issues and drug court issues or drug issues are oftentimes one and the same. So what we're trying to do is basically give the specialty courts flexibility to where they feel best to deploy whatever funds are collected from this. So,
in addition to the tax on pipes, the cost of a tobacco permit will also be directed towards specialty courts. The annual fee for this tobacco permit will be $1,000. The governor appoints hundreds of people to positions, and they all require the Senate to confirm these appointments. For the majority of these people, the Senate votes on a large block of names.
I rise for the confirmation of Kayla Lyon as the 8th Director of the Department of Natural Resources.
For some of the prominent positions, a person is confirmed individually. Republican Senator Tim Kaputzian advocates for Kayla Lyon's confirmation, which requires a two-thirds vote.
Her latest position was Policy Advisor for Ag and Natural Resources to Governor Reynolds, where she interacted with many natural resources constituency groups and played an integral role in Senate File 512 water quality bill.
That file was signed into law in 2018, creating a water quality infrastructure fund of almost $300 million over 12 years. But critics of the law, like Democratic Senator Rob Hoeg, says it doesn't require enough outcomes to get meaningful results. But Hoeg says since Lyon began this position last summer, she has enforced environmental laws. He also says she does not have the education or professional background a person for this position normally has.
That doesn't necessarily mean she shouldn't have this position if she's committed to doing the job. But I do think she will continue to have to demonstrate to Iowans that she's not just there to do the governor's political bidding.
Senator Hoeg supports her confirmation. Senator Tim Kaputsian says Lyon grew up on a dairy farm near Decorah and has an understanding of conservation.
Northeast Iowa is an area of the state many of us consider a leader in conservation. The rolling countryside demands practices like multiple crop rotations, contour and strip contour farming, terracing and minimum and no-till farming. You know, for too long we have pitted agriculture and our natural resources against each other. We have impeded progress by accusations and finger pointing. We all share the blame, myself included. It's time to move past this, understand each other better, and work together. With appreciation and enthusiasm for our natural resources, along with her experience in agriculture, I believe Director Lyon can bring us together and move us towards a better environment.
Kayla Lyon is confirmed by the Senate. 7 Democrats vote against her confirmation. Another director confirmation comes before the Senate, but this is from a department that has been mired in controversy for several years, the Department of Human Services. From the privatization of the state's Medicaid program, the death of adopted children, deaths of residents at Glenwood Resource Center, and now a new investigation at Glenwood looking into whether its residents with severe disabilities were used as human subjects in sexual arousal studies. In June, Director Jerry Foxhoven was fired for reasons the governor still has not elaborated on. In November, the governor appointed Kelly Kennedy Garcia to be the new Department of Human Services director, and now the Senate decides whether or not to confirm her. Republican Senator Annette Sweeney.
Director Garcia's previous role was a deputy executive commissioner of the Texas Health and Human Services Commission. Garcia oversaw 40 client service programs and support functions, which included more than 700 employees and a $1.4 billion budget.
The Iowa Department of Human Services is much larger, with around 4,600 employees and a $6.5 billion budget, which includes a lot of federal funding. Democratic Senator Liz Mathis supports Garcia's confirmation.
Ms. Garcia has been in the news recently. DHS has been in the news recently. She arrived at a very critical time. She was open, informative, and proactive. She's visited Eldora, the MHIs. She's responded to requests. She's answered questions. And she's met with employees. She's smart, capable, has great ideas for Iowa's future.
Democratic Senator Amanda Reagan also supports the confirmation of Garcia.
She is so refreshing to have in that position. She communicates with all of us in the human resources segment, and it has really been great to have that rapport with her. She's high energy and definitely has the passion for this job.
Republican Senator Annette Sweeney thanks her Democratic colleagues for their support.
They have been marvelous to work with this year in the human resources, and I look forward to working even more hand in hand with them and for us to be able to work with the Department of Human Services. My colleagues, I urge you to support her today, and I move her confirmation.
Kelly Kennedy Garcia is confirmed with no senators voting against. This is Under the Golden Dome from Iowa Public Radio. I'm John Pimble.
Like what you're hearing? Make sure to follow Iowa Public Radio on social media for more episodes and share Under the Golden Dome with your friends. Use the hashtag UTGDPod.
Under the Golden Dome is supported by Cultivating Compassion, the Dr. Richard Deming Foundation, and by the Iowa Bankers Association. Helping Iowans reach their financial goals is what Iowa banks are all about. Discover the genuine difference of Iowa banks by following Iowa Bankers on Facebook and Twitter.
I see this as a central part and probably the most important part and step one of our welfare reform project.
Republican Senator Jason Schultz supports a series of bills he and other Republicans are calling welfare reform. This week, one of those bills comes to the Senate chamber for a debate. Senate File 2272 requires verification that a person's income qualifies them to be on public assistance programs. Senator Schultz says the Department of Human Services needs help in doing this.
Despite the best efforts of hundreds of state employees, our system is out of date. And because of that, despite the hard work of good people, the error rate is still too high. That what they're doing is the best of their ability, but we are asking them to do something at a level of high accuracy with equipment and time restraints that are not realistic. So I bring you 2272.
This would allow a third party to do the verification. Last year, the federal government fined the state $1.8 million for having a 10% error rate of improper payments in the SNAP program. That's the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, or food stamp program. An error is where an over- or underpayment is made. In this case, most were overpayments.
What causes improper payments in SNAP? About 60% is actual state error, and that would be not a fault of the individuals who are doing the income checks, but it would be more it would be the fault of the old system that you're using. Trying to get humans to make phone calls on 600,000 people, handle the data, transfer the data from one screen to the next, ends up being about 60% of the errors. 40% of the errors are actually client error, whether they put down wrong information on the application that was sent through or outright fraud.
The number of people in Iowa on SNAP is around 300,000, and the number of people on Medicaid is near 600,000. Some Iowans are on more than one public assistance program. Under this proposal, not only would income be checked, but so would physical asset ownership. So this verification could include automobiles, watercraft, or property. It also checks for gambling or lottery winnings. If someone is found ineligible, they would be removed from SNAP, Medicaid, Children's Health Insurance Program, and the Family Investment Program. This bill proposes someone would have 10 days to respond to the DHS before their benefits are terminated. Democratic Senator Zach Walls proposes an amendment taking this 10-day period out of the equation. Senator Walls says 10 days may not be enough time to resolve someone's situation if there is an error.
Now, in America, we have a very simple idea, which is that you're innocent until proven guilty. And so what the amendment does is that following provision of written notice to a recipient under this section, the recipient's benefits shall continue until the issue identified in the notice is resolved. So rather than them being cut off upon this being raised and then having to go through the resolution of the issue, we say we clarify that the benefits shall continue until the issue identified in the notice is resolved.
Schultz says by using a third party to verify instead of the Department of Human Services, the DHS would be more efficient and able to handle these kinds of resolutions faster.
We will end up with a automated higher accuracy system with fewer letters being sent out. And in fact, if we could move to this system, we'd probably end up having enough man hours saved that we could have a phone call and a personal touch. The improvements to the system that this would offer are phenomenal.
Citing a study made by the national organization, the Center on Budget and Policy Priorities, Zach Walls says SNAP users often need access to their benefits quickly.
According to 2016 data, 21% of SNAP eligibility benefits are used on the very first day they are issued. 21%, Senator Schultz, of those benefits are used on the very first day. By the end of the first week, it's 60% of their benefits are being used to go out and buy food. By the end of the second week, it's 80% of their benefit. Every day counts. And so if this new system is going to be so efficient and move so fast, I think that you should be supporting this amendment.
This amendment fails. Another part of the bill states the savings from using these third-party vendors for verification must equal the amount they are being paid by Iowa, which is estimated to be about $2 million. An amendment is filed to eliminate this portion of the bill. Democratic Senator Bill Dotzler supports removing this requirement.
If you don't show that you are worth your worth and you're not catching enough people, and here's the operative word that changed, we may get rid of you. What do you think they're going to think? That if they're entering into a contract and they invest all this money and they're working on, I think they got to maybe even help design some stuff, that if they don't catch people, whether they legitimately need to catch them or not, that they're going to lose their contract.
Senator Schultz says while these vendors will collect data, they won't make a decision about who is or isn't going to be in a public assistance program.
The vendor can't kick anybody off the program. The vendor doesn't do any kicking off. The vendor doesn't do any notification of the recipient. The vendor doesn't say who's eligible. The vendor doesn't do anything other than take the identity of the recipient, run it through the algorithm, say, hey, there's a few things that look like it's not kosher here. DHS, why don't you actually make the manual check on this individual? That means that they cannot do that. There is no incentive for the vendor to kick anybody off. All they're doing is providing good information. All that's measured is whether or not the information is good.
In the lobbyists' declarations for the bill, there are only two organizations registered in support, Americans for Prosperity and Iowans for Tax Relief. There are also many registered undecided. Democratic Senator Rob Hogue asks Senator Jason Schultz to yield to questions. As he does, Hogue notes the religious and health organizations that are registered opposed to this bill.
Why are all the health care providers and the health advocacy groups registered against this bill?
Money. They want money in the system.
Okay.
They don't care where it comes from. They don't care what the integrity of the system is. They want money. They were paid there to represent people. And that is what we deal with in every subcommittee.
So what you're saying is you think there are people who are qualifying for Hawkeye and Medicaid who aren't eligible, and the reason that the Iowa, let's be specific about this, the Iowa Association of Rural Health Clinics, the Iowa Behavioral Health Association, the Iowa Primary Care Association, the reason those organizations are registered against this bill is because they like the money they get from people who you don't think should be entitled to Medicaid.
They serve a population that receives taxpayer dollars, and they don't want any fences around those dollars. I'm not calling it evil. I'm not saying that's rotten, crooked, or anything. I'm just, when lobbyists come to represent the interests of their constituent, their client, in that matter, okay, where it's a lobbyist. We've had other bills where folks who are traditionally aligned more with conservative thought have registered against bills simply because, well, it would affect us, so we're going to go against it. We see this frequently. People don't want fences around their access.
This evening debate lasts around 2.5 hours. As Senator Schultz makes his closing remarks, he refers back to his conversation with Senator Hogue.
When I said that it was about money, and there are people who just say, I don't care, I just want more money in the industry that they serve in, and they serve in the welfare industry. It's just social justice warriors who don't care about how much money comes in, they want more. So I'll double down that a lot of the people around the wall are left-wing social justice warriors.
The Legislative Services Agency fiscal note estimates the verification program will cost $1.8 million a year. The money the state will save on SNAP is zero because the federal government makes those payments. The federal government also pays a large share of Medicaid, but the state also contributes, and the LSA study indicates by 2022, the savings to Iowa's budget would be $12 million a year.
So, ladies and gentlemen, we've got a fiscal note that has only a $1.8 million cost, and when you get down to the net of how much is it going to cost up front and how much is it going to save the second year, I think it is very safe to say that we are going to save in 2 years $10 million.
As Senator Schultz says $10 million, he is doing an impression of the movie character Dr. Evil. A week prior, Democratic Senator Claire Selce posted a picture on Twitter of Schultz and this character in reference to the bill, asking, what would Dr. Evil do? The bill passes on a party-line vote. Senator Schultz has floor-managed a bill similar to this in previous sessions, but they did not pass the House of Representatives. This is the legislative podcast, Under the Golden Dome. I'm John Pimple.
A good civics lesson teaches you how to be an engaged citizen, and listening to Under the Golden Dome helps you be an engaged Iowan. When you become a member of Iowa Public Radio, you support coverage that keeps you engaged and informed. Give now at iowapublicradio.org/donate. It takes just a few minutes to make a powerful impact.
Under the Golden Dome is supported by the Iowa Bankers Association and by Cultivating Compassion, the Dr. Richard Deming Foundation, fostering causes that enrich the community, generate understanding, and cultivate compassion, including Above and Beyond Cancer.
Inside the Capitol, on the rotunda floor, activists gather for an evening public hearing about a proposed constitutional amendment that says the state constitution does not protect abortion rights.
That is beautiful. Thank you so much for respecting our right to make decisions about our own bodies.
The resolution is a response to a 2018 Iowa Supreme Court ruling that made further laws restricting abortion unlikely to stand up in court. This resolution does not prohibit abortion, but if it were to be amended to the state constitution, it would make future legislation restricting abortion less likely to be successfully challenged in a court. The measure has already passed in the Senate, and this public hearing is for the House of Representatives. The chief clerk for the House, Megan Nelson, is organizing those who wish to testify. About 160 people signed up through a legislative website. Among those who showed up, 40 will speak. The rotunda is acting as an overflow room. Chairs have been set up so people can watch the public hearing, which will take place in the next room. Inside the room where the public hearing takes place, Judiciary Committee Chair Republican Stephen Holt begins the process.
We're here to listen to what the public has to say. We will alternate between those for and those against the proposed amendment.
This hearing will last 2 hours, and everyone can speak for 3 minutes.
This issue is a passionate one for both sides on the issue. I trust that each side will be respectful of the other. Disruptions to this proceeding will not be tolerated.
Since the overflow audience is not far away, you will hear them cheering and reacting as they watch. But their video feed has a long delay of around 30 seconds. That means when you hear the crowd cheer in the background, it's a reaction to something that was said earlier.
1 in 4 women have abortions, and I am one of them.
Frida Beckwith is one of the 40 people selected to speak.
I became pregnant when I was 15 years old after experiencing a sexual assault. I tried to reach out for help. I researched my options, and I called a number that I found online. I now know that number belonged to an anti-choice organization. They blamed me for what had happened to me. They made me feel ashamed and isolated, and they led me to believe I could not access a safe and legal abortion. Still, I knew I could not carry the pregnancy to term, so I had an abortion without telling anyone. It was a horrible experience to go through alone, and I would never wish it on another person.
Brittany Ruska supports the amendment and says her grandmother became pregnant years before a U.S. Supreme Court decision established a legal right to an abortion.
In 1965, my biological grandmother was a victim of date rape. She became pregnant as a young teenager and bravely carried my mother, then selflessly gave her up for adoption. From my mother came 3 children and 4 grandchildren. I think about how different our life might have been had my mother been conceived 8 short years later. And by life, I mean I wouldn't have existed. I wouldn't be sitting here in front of you today. My mother became pregnant with me at 16 years old. Her adoptive mother and stepfather tried to force my mom to abort me. My mother had to run away from her home to the safety of her adoptive father. I think about the pressure my mom felt to get rid of me and how she was told I would ruin her life. I think about what if I was destroyed in her womb. I think about how my mother was an overcomer and what a wonderful life I had with her.
Ruby Bodeker shares her experience about having an abortion.
The choice I made on Good Friday, 2008, was a choice that was mine to make, and I would make it again in a heartbeat. I ask that all members of the House, including my own male representative, vote against this overreaching constitutional amendment. It is not your job to take away Iowans' rights. As a woman of the Lutheran faith, I know angels still sing for me. I know I did nothing wrong. I accessed health care and I made a decision.
Nancy Lincoln had an abortion when she was 19 and regrets the decision.
For the next 16 years, I was haunted by my abortion secret and used drugs to cope with the unseen burden that I carried. It felt like heavy chains wrapped around my soul as I suffered in silence. I couldn't tell anyone for fear of their judgment, and even married my husband without being able to tell him of my pain for my abortion. But then God did a miracle, and I met Jesus Christ, who forgave me of all of my sins and brought me peace for the first time in my life.
Stacy Jackson says she is frustrated the legislature is considering this kind of constitutional amendment.
Each individual should be making their own health care choices. These are personal decisions that should be made by each individual. Until you have walked in that person's shoes, you have no idea what they're going through. In fact, it's each person's right to make their own decision regarding their health. You wouldn't like it if I started making decisions regarding yours.
There are many women testifying about having had an abortion when they were younger, including Laura Lemix, who was pregnant at age 16.
And I made the hasty decision to have an abortion out of fear of anyone knowing. Upon arriving at the clinic, I was given no information about the surgical abortion procedure. In a follow-up appointment for the abortion, they informed me they had not completely removed the baby and told me I would need to return for another procedure. Before the second procedure occurred, I passed the remains of my baby in a toilet. We know within these clinics they have a place where they sort through the remains of a child to make sure all the pieces are there. On this day, they sent away a 16-year-old girl with an incomplete abortion, and they knew her parents had no knowledge of the abortion appointment. I was traumatized not only by the procedure, but by the sight of what was left of my child.
Jennifer Leatherby says she had an abortion to save her life.
HJR 2004 risks the life, liberty, safety, and happiness of Iowans. The text of this amendment states that Iowans shall have, quote, no right to abortion or required public funding of abortion to defend the dignity of all human life and to protect mothers and unborn children from efforts to expand abortion even to the day of birth. As a person who would be considered mother if this amendment were to pass, I can promise you that losing access to abortion would, without a doubt, put the safety and dignity of my human life at risk.
Lindsay Maher says legislators need to present both sides of the abortion issue more often in the event this amendment does come before the people for a vote.
This would yield a public that is ready to make a truly informed decision on what is best for our state constitution. We would have a society of educated and informed citizens engaged in legislature, which to those in Washington, D.C. may seem extremely dangerous. But thankfully, this is Iowa, where we hopefully welcome engagement and well-informed citizens. Please move this bill forward and allow us, the people, to vote specifically on this matter.
Legislators do not speak during this public hearing, but the Republican chair of the Judiciary Committee, Representative Stephen Holt, supported this resolution when it passed the full committee. This resolution is expected to be debated in the full House chamber. If it passes, this same resolution will have to come before the House and Senate during the next General Assembly, which begins next year. If it passes again, the measure will be placed on a ballot where the public can vote whether or not this resolution will become part of Iowa's Constitution. A 2018 decision from the Iowa Supreme Court has driven the abortion constitutional amendment, but this year, the court is changing. By the spring, there will be four justices who weren't part of that decision. There's also a new Chief Justice, Susan Christensen. She's been on the court for 2 years. Christensen says she will lead Iowa's judiciary in a manner which provides all 99 counties with fair and impartial justice. Under the Golden Dome is one part of Iowa Public Radio's legislative coverage. More comes from our Statehouse reporter, Katerina Sestarik. Grant Gerlach is also at the Capitol filing stories. Read their work at iowapublicradio.org. Script editing for this episode comes from our news director, Michael Leland. Digital team support from Lindsay Moon and Matt Siren. Kay Henderson from Radio Iowa provides tips, history, information, and all kinds of things that helps many of our stories. Also, thanks to the entire press pool at the Capitol. Share this show on your social media feed. Use the hashtag UTGDPod. I'm John Pimple. Under the Golden Dome is a production of Iowa Public Radio.